Hey there, Nutters. Got a great show for you today. This is Dan Rubin. I'll be joined by Garrick Hodge and Mark Porter. Who will commit first, LeBron James or David Gabriel George? Ohio waits with bated breath. We'll discuss that, take a look at Elijah Newman Hall, and talk all other recruiting topics here on the show. Thanks for joining us. Be back in just a sec. Good morning, Bucknutters. It is Tuesday, July 14th, 2026. I am Dan Rubin. This is the Bucknuts Morning 5 and Change, joined by Garrick Hodge and, thankfully, Mark Porter. Good Lord, gives us a scare. He was not here past Thursday and then rolled the roller coaster to Tuesday and showed. Will he be here on Thursday? Nobody knows, but we are definitely happy to have him here today. Got a great show for you. We are going to talk about a running back who is committed to Ohio State and represents a good portion of their future. It's not David Gabriel George. It is Elijah Newman Hall, the first commitment of the class of 2028. We'll go to the videotape and show you that. And we will discuss Cruton in general. However, just because I know where I'm sitting, Garrick, you are legally obligated to comment on David Gabriel George. We have a, I think it's up to 9 or 10 page thread on the front row, basically saying, is the juice worth the squeeze for DGG? Any angle you have ever possibly wanted on that question is there. And as I jested before the show, the world is centered on Ohio. As Ohioans wait for LeBron and DGG to make their decision, and nobody knows. Garrick, what is the absolute latest on a coin toss decision?
Well, first I want to know, what's the jail time penalty if I don't comment on it? Because if I'm legally obligated on it, I missed that section in the Bucknuts bylaws. Do I get in the slimer for 3 months, or is it a full year-long suspension? What's the penalty for that?
Tomorrow we go into a week from his commitment date, so I think you're still in probationary time here. Uh-oh. However, shows starting tomorrow, if you don't comment, you will be let out in cuffs.
Okay. Well, I don't want a perp walk, so I guess I better say something. I think, and this is a very dangerous thing to say when we run a website that brings you daily updates on recruiting, but I'm going to say it anyway because I value the truth with all you guys. I think take anything you hear on the George front with a grain of salt until probably 36 to 24 hours before his commitment. I mean, we've already gotten the news cycle that he's made up his mind, and then there's a news cycle yesterday that actually he hasn't made up his mind and he's going into decision and he's 50-50, etc. And frankly, I think it is still up in the air. Dan, you said yesterday it's 50-50. I tend to agree with that. I think that both Ohio State and Tennessee are getting a little nervous, but they're both confident in their own ways. I think that in a lot of ways, this reminds me of the Chris Henry commitment the last 3 days when Brian Hartline was leaving for USF. And we sensed some optimism waning on the Ohio State front that they were going to keep him in the fold. And Oregon was very confident that they were going to end up finally converting on a attempt to flip him that they had been doing for years at that point because it was Ohio State at their weakest. Yeah, rumored compensation out there. I think it was $2 million, whatever. I believe I've talked to somebody who thinks that it might be even higher on Tennessee's end when it comes to total compensation. So there's a lot of speculation about what the actual offer is. What it is on Ohio State's end, who knows? But I can say that I feel confident that it will probably be the highest offer they've ever made to a high school running back. Whether that's enough to get it done, we'll see. We'll have to wait a week from now. But I think both programs are sweating bullets. I think both programs know how big of a monumental win this would be and how big of a day on the message boards it'll be if they don't get it done. Not that Ohio State ever does any business trying to appease message board people. That's not how they do business. They operate winning football games, and that's their first priority. But they know it's going to be a rough day at the office if they can't get this one done. I would say it's as close as I've ever seen it. I think that the money on the table for a running back like this would turn Mark Porter into a cardiac arrest just based on the positional value. If this was a salary cap league, and while the revenue share has a cap, we all know that there are legal loopholes around it, that there is no true cap in college football necessarily. So if a school feels he's worth it, then why not go for it? I know that Ohio State values George as a once in a few cycles type of caliber of a running back. This is the guy that they've wanted for three straight cycles and have circled on him. And we're finally getting to the point to see if they can convert on it. If they don't get it, I've already posted on Bucknuts, I think they'll turn their attention to someone like Jaden Miles, a Florida State running back commit who took an official visit to Ohio State. I don't think it would take a whole lot to flip him. They will flip a decent caliber running back at some point, but it obviously won't be George caliber. We'll get into more in that if and when it's necessary. For now, it will be, do they get him or do they not? And then if it's not, we'll obviously give a postmortem on where they go from there. But this is all a long-winded way of saying that ask me 36 hours before he makes a decision, and I think I can tell you pretty close to how it's going to go. But right now, I mean, it keeps on momentum swings depending on who you ask every 24 hours or so. And I think as exciting of a player he is, as much of a recruiting win as this would be for Ohio State, on both sides, Tennessee and Ohio State, there is a little bit of George fatigue just in terms of the coverage. Like, all right, let's just hear the decision, then react one way or the other from there. So I'm excited to see how this plays out, and I'm glad that I have fulfilled my legal obligations and I will be not dragged away from my house in handcuffs. So big win for me. Well,
we'll see about that on Thursday. I feel the fatigue. Like I said, 9 pages. What makes it interesting, Mark, and we've talked about this, the overarching theme of recruiting these days is the professionalization of college football. And it's interesting, a lot of the discussion and the thread is basically the same discussion you have in the NFL when you either are trying to retain a big-time running back or go after one. What value do you place on a running back? Because if you think about it, and Mark, I'm going to let you run with this here. We're going to do a preview on Elijah Newman Hall later today. So theoretically, you would never play a season without Bo Jackson or Elijah Newman Hall, even if you don't get DGG. So that's interesting in and of itself. Mark, your thoughts, both specific and general, take this anywhere you want it.
Yeah, so I'm your evaluation guy, not the rumor guy, and you know, 9 pages of that. So let's stick to the facts. If I'm Mark Pantone and I'm the guy in charge of putting a number to this deal, I just kind of, let me bounce these numbers off you. If you're a top 10 player in the NFL draft, it really doesn't matter which position because you're slotted. But if you're in the top 10, you're going to be getting about, you know, a 4-year contract for $12 million. You know, that gives you about $3.2 million a year. You know, the first pick of the second round would be $12.4 million, $2.35 million a year. So the first pick in the second round is getting $2 million a year. If David Gabriel Georges right now is rumored to be getting $2 million a year, that doesn't bother me. That's the going rate for that caliber of a player or beyond in the NFL. So what do you think you're going to have to pay him a year later to stop him from going to the NFL? You know, so you kind of, you're doing these numbers. Is this guy worth bumping up over $1 million? I mean, when we heard $1 million the first time, wasn't that like, whoa, $1 million to a running back, and then you're throwing two, maybe more? That's the numbers that are out there. 5.4 for $1 million per year if you're a first rounder, 2 point something and start the second round. Boy, that's a tough pill to swallow. But if you're going to get the early tread on the tires on this guy, like you're going to get Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan Robinson in college and you can run him into the dirt, And because you're going to pay him to run, you can give him the 25 carries a game. You know, not like in the NFL, we're like, yeah, we want to save these guys a little bit. We want to caddy them, running back by committee. I tell you what, you give someone that kind of money coming in and get ready for 25 carries. And that brings the other thing is, what do you do with Bo Jackson now? And how do you handle that? Because, you know, that may want to push someone out the door if someone else is going to get all these carries because you're paying him that money. You're not going to pay him that money to be the backup and get 8 to 10 carries a game. So if this is money, which it looks like it is, which we all hate because that is an equalizer that, you know, throws out all the great things about Ohio State, the coaching, the NFL, you know, preparedness. And so, yeah, I think that if you had to go to $2 million, that's truly upsetting your locker room. That's not something you want to do, is give a guy coming in that much money who is unproven. But, boy, like you say, every, you know, three or four turnstiles in the recruiting process, there's maybe one player that comes up like this. And I think this, like I said today, is a force multiplier. He makes your offensive line better. He makes your running game better. You don't have to hold blocks as long. You're getting more yards per carry. Him lining up there makes puts more people in the box, per se. So there are hidden values to this player if he is what we have him evaluated on, as. And I think not only me, but everybody's on the same evaluational track with this kid. There is no, like, one-off guy where you're like, hey, I don't see this generation you guys are talking about. I see a 185-pounder who's diminutive. This is, by all accounts, by all eyeballs, north, south, east, and west, you know, not generational, but every couple cycle type player. So I'm not one to spend money like this. So I feel what Mark Pantone must be going through. Like, hey, we always said we're not going to break the bank for one player, and we've let other players walk in the past, usually offensive tackles, because we don't get into these bidding wars. This is, in my opinion, going to come down to what's the difference between Ohio State's money and Tennessee's money, and does the Ohio State just being such a better program make up that difference? Where you're like, okay, they're 700,000 more than we are. They're almost 3 million or something. Ohio State being Ohio State should make up that difference, I would think. You know, just go there. You're going to be more secure being developed. You're not going to be on a team that is losing the way they lost to Ohio State a couple of years ago. I know I'm being long-winded with this, but I think from the money standpoint now, I think that's all we need to be talking about is what would be a fair offer? $2 million, 2.5? I mean, how bad do you want them if this is about money?
If everybody from Tennessee comes out for the announcement with their shirt off, should we be concerned or not? That's the real question. I'll take that as a good sign for us.
I tell you what, Garrett told me he would take his shirt off if he comes to Ohio State.
That's slander and not true.
Okay.
Also, you're legally obligated to not say that again.
Yeah. I want to tell you, before this gets into the chat, people are going to say something about Dwayne Long. Dwayne's had three-star, four-star, five-star, and then naked jaunt. Naked being naked and jaunt meaning you get a commitment from this guy. You take off all your clothes and run through the neighborhood. So the ghost of Dwayne Long, the late, great Dwayne Long, should DGG commit, I would say if you see a really big human being ghost apparition around the hilltop in Columbus, just know that DGG is a Buckeye. And that would be very cool.
A la Frank the Tank would be the way I'd be running through the town square.
Frank the Tank, yes. They're going streaking. Dwayne, I think people might be surprised if they had ever seen Dwayne in person. He was a big fella. One of the greatest human beings I've ever had a chance to hang out with, and we miss him dearly. He would love him some DGG. He'd be so over the moon with getting Caden Moss, though. He'd probably still be hammered, but I digress. Very interesting stuff there, Mark. It really is. Because I'm starting to think to myself, like, okay, let's say DGG comes. Boy, you'd feel really much better about Tavian St. Clair starting his first year with DGG and Bo Jackson in the backfield. You're going to have a first-time starter at center. That's also troubling to me. Whenever you have a first-time starter at quarterback, you want to be as good as possible. So, I don't know. We're going streaking. It is. My son and I just had this discussion the other day. Old School is one of those movies that as an 80s comedy freak, old school matches up. All right, Derek, let's talk about the defensive line. This is a very positive conversation. I think that's the only commitment we're waiting for, really, in the class of 2027. And that is Carlos May out of Birmingham. I believe he's the 20th. Is that correct? Or the 18th?
Yeah, the 18th.
That's my fault. Your thoughts on there? I get a if the coin toss is for DGG, I would say this is I don't know enough math, but this is a toss that we will do very good in. I get a real sense that May is headed to Ohio State.
Yeah, right now all signs are good. The optimism is certainly all on the Ohio State side of things right now. I'm trying to stay cautiously optimistic in terms of it because I always wonder if a team like Auburn is going to make things very interesting at the 11th hour and try to deliver Mr. Bagman at the 11th hour. And sometimes that's the way these recruitments go. But that aside, all indications are that Ohio State is in a great position here. And I would say that I feel more confident about Carlos than I do George right now. That doesn't mean that George isn't going to Ohio State. I just feel more confident about Carlos being a Buckeye than I do David at this point in time. But yeah, he'll, I think the 18th is Saturday. I should check my calendar, but yeah, we won't have to wait very long. He'll commit before the week is done. And if and when he does commit to Ohio State, that will be one of the better defensive line hauls that Larry Johnson has brought in his Ohio State tenure. I mean, you have to go back.
That's saying something.
Yes, you have to go back to the 2021 class to find one that compares to it, at least in recent memory. But, yeah, I think you can sell Carlos that you can be the only true defensive tackle in the class. And that's something that Georgia and Auburn, his other two main contenders, can't offer because each of them has a defensive tackle committed. And I think that that could go a long way. And I also think that they view him as a priority and they'll be competitive on the modern recruiting front. So, again, all the vibes are good right now, but I guess never say never until you get the verbal. And then after that, never say never until December. But, a lot of positive momentum on that front right now, and I'd say I'm cautiously optimistic they find a way to get that done on Saturday.
Carlos May is a native of Birmingham, Alabama. The idea of going into Alabama and pulling out a large human to play for Ohio State is encouraging, perhaps lessened by the recent development that Anthony Blaylock, who Mark knows very well, a Youngstown native who has gone up against Fair DJ Porter on several platforms, has verbally committed to Alabama, which for shock value, for just coming out of nowhere value, I give him a 10 because I had not heard one person say that. I had not heard one person even mention Alabama as being that strong of a suitor or that the young man was willing to commit early enough. Garrick, I'm going to let you have the floor quickly to describe and let everyone know who Anthony Blaylock is and where he might stand on Ohio State's wish list. And then we'll give Mark the floor because, once again, Mark has an intimate knowledge of this gentleman that others do not.
Yeah, I saw Ant camp at Ohio State this summer. And obviously I was a little more impressed with him than I thought I was going to be, just in terms of how technically sound he was. Now, I think Ohio State was also more impressed with him than they thought they would be, but I don't know if they were ready to make a big push for him as of right now. I think that there is something to be said that there's a little bit refinement needed on the physique. I think that you need to clean that up a little bit before you're gung-ho about bringing him in. Either way, I think he's going to be a really damn good guard at the collegiate level. I think that's where his future lies. Even if he does clean up the physique a little bit, I think he's slotted in on that guard front compared to a guy like Kayvon Blackman, who I think is more of a tackle prospect. Maybe Mark disagrees, but I kind of see him as a tackle from what I saw in June. But yeah, I got a little bit of a hint that from just a little bit he and I spoke at that camp that he wanted to make a decision pretty soon. And I didn't really get the vibe that Ohio State wanted an answer from him right now. I also don't get the vibe that this isn't a recruitment they couldn't get back into months down the road if they really wanted to. I think that he's always had an affinity for Ohio State, and if Ohio State came after him, if he does the work that Ohio State wants to see, I don't see why he couldn't be a Buckeye one day if that's what both parties want. But, I guess from my perspective, the commitment was kind of sort of out of left field. But I also wasn't all that surprised because I thought there were discussions about him making a decision sooner rather than later. So here we are. Alabama is no slouch themselves, obviously, even post Nick Saban era. But if he turns into a really damn good prospect, I don't see why Ohio State couldn't get back in the race sometime next spring if that's what they end up wanting to do.
Yeah, Mark, could you explain maybe his height, weight, what you've seen, where you project him, et cetera?
Yeah, since I'm local here to Austin Town Fitch, I've watched Big Ant, as they call him, grow up. I was just thinking in my head watching him 7th and 8th grade, ragdoll some of the Canfield players around the field. But what Garrick is alluding to, we knew in 7th and 8th grade, hey, Big Ant wears out, and they have to take him out every now and then because he's so big. You know, it was just obvious at that age that after so many snaps, you weren't going to get 100% effort out of a younger player, and that narrative is something that plays out if your body doesn't lean out and get in shape. So what right now Big Ant has is a lot of flashes on tape where you're buying the flashes. You're buying these clips where you're like, that's what it looks like. But is he a guard or tackle? Most are saying guard right now because his feet are probably not elite. They're probably elite for who he's playing and who he's been up against in high school. But when you get to the national level and you say we need that elite left tackle, that's another animal altogether. Now, if he wants that, he could get it. It's within his grasp. I was there a day when a big-time college coach worked him out at Fitch early on in his career, and I got to see him really be pushed and how he reacted to that, and it was very positive. I think it's in him, and I think the work is in progress. And, Dan, you nailed it. This was out of left field. There were no rumors circulating Youngstown that Ohio State better jump on board or, you know, offer a boatload in a hurry. And you're right. If you're Alabama, you're nervous. Can we hold him this whole time? And if you're Ohio State, if this player really develops this year and you see a junior tape where you're like, the feet are there. Okay. Well, we saw, like you said, you saw it in June. They can make an offer and flip. Okay. So this isn't over, but I think that's the storyline we're following right now. A player that's showing the flashes definitely earned the Ohio State offer, but in the realm of the overall bigger picture, is he worth dropping a huge NIL load on right now? Not really. Obviously, Ohio State probably knew this was going to happen before we do, and they probably had a chance to stop it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe they just feel like rolling the dice if this early, letting him see greener pastures. I meant the emphasis on the green there. Maybe that's it. It's very interesting. It's just surprising. Go ahead.
I have a digression for the running backs before we get into the next running back we talk about. When you watched the NFL and you saw Jahmyr Gibbs and then David Montgomery come into the game, there was a difference, an obvious difference. When you saw Tyler Algier being substituted for Bijan Robinson in Atlanta, big difference. And the reason I point those two backs out, they were highly drafted. And David Montgomery was highly coveted by the Texans in the offseason as a starting running back in the NFL. And Tyler Algier was brought to the Cardinals to be the starting running back until they went sideways and drafted a rookie. But my point being is I'm not one that would advocate paying running backs. I'm kind of a running back by committee. Hey, they're all kind of the same. Give me two or three, and we'll keep spinning them in there and keep them fresh, and they'll give you different things until you find one that does it all. And I want to put a sharper point on this. When Jahmyr Gibbs is in the backfield, every play in the playbook is there. Pass plays, run plays, motion them out, mismatches versus linebackers. When David Montgomery's back there, that whole playbook is not there. And it's almost like, hey, guys, buckle down between the tackles. Here it comes. And all of a sudden,
because he runs,
start to see why my running back committee – like lean is not very smart, because hey, when they put the little guy in, guess what they're going to do? And they match defenses. Hey, when they put the bigger guy in, guess what they're going to do? Boom. It's not hard to figure out. This is easy. But when they have the dude back there, I don't know if they're going to slam it through the A gap right here at 100 miles an hour, or I don't know if he's motioning out. I don't know what's going on. And it really gives you an extra cloak as a play caller. So that's why, like, for me to advocate to pay this guy a little bit ago, that's not the Mark Porter that's been on this podcast for the past couple of years. And as I got done saying that, I'm like, you know what? If someone watches your other podcast, they're going to say, Mark, aren't you the guy that says running backs come off the street all the time? And just they do. And most of them are David Montgomery and Tyler Algier and 50 other guys that are kind of the same in the NFL. They're all elite. They're all good. But there's only a handful that are evaluated to this next rung. And that's where David Gabriel George is and Kamon Spell. Those were the two this year that we thought, boy, Kamon Spell is the running back out of Pennsylvania. But those were the two that really jumped off the page is, boy, these might be worth actually paying, even though that's not the position we put our salary cap allocation into. So there's my little digression.
It reminds me, Lo, many, many, many years ago, I had an internship in an NBA front office. And around the draft, the general manager told me, here's the rule. Don't fall for the outlier. Don't try and force the outlier. But also, if you miss on the outlier, you're fired. So it's not an easy job. They used to call this the Byron Houston parable, because after Charles Barkley came out at 6'4.5 and dominated the league, everyone was like, let's find another 6'5 strong guy to rebound. And there's only one Charles Barkley. The interesting thing about what we just discussed is the Lions no longer have David Montgomery. And it's because Gibbs, like you said, has gotten cost prohibitive. They're going to have to pay him. And then the question is, the crux of that is, can Jahmyr Gibbs run between the tackles successfully enough to keep the defense honest? And they're betting that he can. So that'd be very interesting to watch. Not sure it has much effect on the Buckeyes. All right, let's talk about a guy who has going to have a big effect on the Buckeyes. I want to start with Garrick, because Garrick's first chance to see Elijah Newman Hall, the running back who's the first class of 28 commitment, really early on last year. He was at camp recently, and let's just say his physique belies his age, and he's quite an impressive young man. Please tell us about the Elijah Newman Hall experience, and then, Mark, we will go to the videotape.
Yeah, I've told this story multiple times on the podcast, but when he camped at Ohio State, a contingent of an Ohio high school team just stopped what they were doing and watched Elijah Newman Hall worked out, because they were that impressed by the physique and the movement to the lateral quickness, the whole package, everything about it. But when Elijah Newman Hall first committed to Ohio State last summer, kind of caught everybody off guard, like, oh, wow, okay. Didn't see this coming 3 years out, but all right. And then everything we heard is that Ohio State was very high on the young man, and now he's blossomed into a top 75 prospect in the country. Spoke with his father briefly at camp, and he said that a couple days after college coaches around the country are legally able to reach out to prospects that are going into their junior year, his phone didn't stop blowing up, and they didn't respond to any of them outside of Ohio State. So Elijah is probably one of the most committed out-of-state prospects I can see in recent memory. I mean, never say never in modern recruiting, but I haven't gotten the sense at all that this guy wants to explore his options, which is sort of remarkable to me, considering he resides in Florida and he's going to start at IMG Academy this year. And I guess to give a grain of salt on the film we're going to get into with Mark, last year he played at a school that obviously you're not going to get the same competition of caliber that you're going to at IMG, but he's also
transferred to IMG Academy since this video was taken.
Yes, yes. I would say he was probably about, let's call it 185, 190 in this film we're going to see. Now he's probably up to 210. So there's been a lot of work done on the body. Without losing any of the quickness, if what I saw was any indication. But Mark, what did you see from sophomore year film of Elijah Newman Hall?
Well, you said it when I first watched it from Blake High School, I believe it was. The competition didn't impress me. There were plays, and you're going to see them on this film, where you'll see guys not chasing at the end, and maybe they're already beat or whatever. But I hate seeing that on film, because this is kind of an undingable prospect. I mean, like you're saying, he showed up and looked the part, and, you know, he doesn't look like a small school kid that plays, you know, weak competition. So it was awesome to see that he's going to IMG Academy, because every question, everything you want to see in him will be answered next year. He will be pushed. He will be against the elite, his weight room, his nutrition, all those things will come to fruition the way they should. But when you see this film, keep in mind that, yeah, this is not what where he is, but at almost 200 pounds, so young, it's really impressive to see his movement skills. I don't want to say he's fooled J.K. Dobbins or anything like that, but there's similarities. I think J.K. had a little more burst, a little more speed. He's truly one of the more elite burst guys, so I don't want to get this there. But Daniel Boom-Heron early on in his career, you know, just because they're 5'11", 200, that's kind of what Boom-Heron played at. And the way his feet are here, he keeps his balance. He fights for the extra yardage. You're going to see that type of grit on all these runs. You see the vision. You see him just easily make three guys miss there with little sidesteps. And that was three guys in space that, okay, there's four. And, you know, as you watch this, you see more of these subtle things where, okay, the side-to-side, the agility, the low center of gravity.
You're right. I'm not trying to interrupt, but you're right. Those guys have seen him before, and they're like, I ain't chasing him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple guys that shut it down early. He can't be faulted. He has to dominate this competition the way it should be. And if you pay attention, every run's a touchdown. You know, I think the last three or four runs are. And I think the last couple plays on this film, I actually put him on defense. He was the punter there, just caught the punt snap and said, I'm going to return it for a touchdown. I'm not going to let the other guy kick it to return it for a touchdown. But you see him on defense, guys. If you said he was coming here to play strong safety or linebacker, I'm good. Okay. Yeah. Like, he comes off the edge a couple times and thumps some people. But I think what we're really going to watch is his junior tape. And I think we're going to be happily impressed. We're not going to be able to pick it apart or ding it or anything, like I've said earlier. But strong lower body. Now, will he have that elite burst? Because I can't tell versus this competition. He puts everything in the end zone, but I'm not going to give the other guys that he's doing it to, you know, like a great rating. So we'll know that for sure if he doesn't get.
It does look like he gets up to speed pretty quick, though, I'll say.
I think I put in my comments when I wrote him up, by the time he's at the line of scrimmage, he's at full speed. Within those first 5 or 6 yards, he's making those sidestep moves at full speed. He doesn't have to slow down and decelerate to do it. So I think those traits are very important. But the biggest trait is what we saw at camp this summer and when he gets to work hand-in-hand with Coach Lachlan.
Yeah, so I said this earlier, so I don't want to, like, just play it out with the DGG stuff. And they're going to be fine at running back regardless. If they have DGG, look, I want to be clear on this too. I'd love for them to pick him up. My assumption is they understand their salary cap to the point where they can manage it. But the idea that is going to determine, you know, their ultimate fate, yay or nay. Running back, you see how many good running backs there are. And this kid's like Garrick said, is going to bust the early Florida commitment mold stress. Although Sean Wade showed up. Everyone thought Sean Wade was going to bail. That worked out beautifully. All right, let's end with a little bit of interesting news. I don't know if it's good or bad. Garrick, Monchon Sales, I do not think is coming to Ohio State. Let's just answer that for the crowd. He is a tremendous wide receiver. I did think early on in his recruitment, he's from Alabama. His nickname is Bama, and he lives in Indiana. Tough sell for the Buckeyes. Your thoughts, and maybe just, I mean, you can finish it off by saying how they're doing wide receiver recruiting. I'm going to guess it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if this goes Ohio State's way. I haven't heard any indication to make me write a commit draft just in case. By all indications, I've heard that Indiana is best positioned to get this done. And the runner-up, if anyone was going to give Indiana pause, it would probably be Texas, not Alabama. I can't see Alabama winning this one either. But, yeah, I mean, I'll keep my ear to the ground. Maybe Thursday I'll feel differently, but I don't expect to. I think that this is going in Indiana's direction. Maybe Texas makes a late move and gets this done, but – I think it would be a hell of a victory lap for Kurt Cignetti, and Yeah, I mean, when you have Jameer Brown, Jet Harrison, and Austin Miller already committed, I think that you're on a great trajectory for wide receiver recruiting. What Ohio State does for 2027, I mean, with Jordan Donahue and Jameer Brown, they'll probably take it into senior evaluations, I would guess, unless they can get Benny Easter to flip. This is, of course, assuming Monchon Sales goes to Indiana or Texas. But ultimately, I think 2028 could be a defensive line type class for Ohio State.
At wide receiver.
Yes, correct. In terms of the haul and the pedigree and the names that we're associating with it. But so we'll see. I mean, I'll be tuning into the commitment just in case on Friday, obviously. But I'd be surprised if he picks Ohio State right now. Maybe I'll feel differently Thursday, but I'd be surprised.
We will be back on Thursday. I'll have this video up here for you shortly, either later on today or first thing tomorrow morning, of Elijah Newman Hall. And then I imagine on Thursday we will put the finishing touches on Carlos May, as he will be committing the day after. And we are on the recruiting trail. Will it be Cleveland for LeBron? And will it be Ohio State for GGG? We all wait with bated breath. And by that I mean DGG. Have a good one. That is true.